So we're doing the first two chapters of Martha Nussbaum's Anger and Forgiveness, which I think we were still recording last time when we talked about that. I think we were, maybe we weren't. This is a book, a recent book from 2016. And knowing what I know now, essentially, this is kind of the modern day anti-anger book. At least generally speaking, that's how it can be read. Okay. Before we like dive into the book, I was telling Adam before you got on the call, Giffen, I thought it would be funny if anything particularly funny happens like over the course of the weeks while we're doing this that makes us like extremely angry or like we witness anger. I thought it'd be like fun. We could, you know, and any anecdotes we can start the podcast with. I have one of my own.
Okay.
Given I was made furious today, and Adam knows that this has happened. This has happened in the past a lot to me. Adam knows that I have like a weak spot for specifically incompetent wastes of my time, and I've had horrible experiences with people doing just that on Facebook Marketplace. I've read Adam. Many exchanges that made no sense whatsoever. Okay. So remember when my bike got stolen?
I do.
So I
you
got
find
like,
it on sale.
No, that would have been amazing, actually.
That would have been fury inducing, but
well, I'm over the anger about that at that point. It would be Mission Impossible. Let's get the bike back.
Okay, fair enough.
At that point. It would be cold and calculating.
Okay, we continue. Yeah.
Okay, but basically I bought like a shitty bike and I've just been kind of like using it since. But I was like, okay, like this is annoying. Let me just get like a good bike. You know what I mean? So I reach out to this guy and I'm like, hey, like I'm interested in the bike. Is there anything wrong with it? He's like, no problems. I'm like, cool, I can pick it up. What's the address? He gives me the address. I say, okay, that's 30 minutes away. How about Wednesday in the day? He goes, that works. I say, cool, I'll get in touch closer to then. This was like early in the week.
Sure.
So yesterday I reach out and I say, how would tomorrow around 1:30 or 2 in the afternoon work? He goes, yes, that will work.
Nice.
Like, okay, like
excellent.
A clear confirmation of the time and place.
Yes.
So I go, great, I'll let you know when I leave. He doesn't respond. I'm sorry. I accidentally skipped to the next day. So this morning, yes. I go, just making sure it is something that I'll be able to test ride, right? He goes, yes. I say, great, I'll let you know when I leave.
All good.
Maybe I'm crazy, but there's no indication that there's a change in the time or place. Like
Not that so I'm aware.
So he responds, this is like, you know, at 9:30 in the morning. He responds, you can start now. I go, I'm not available until when I said I could meet this afternoon. He goes, okay. So then I'm setting out and I say, hey, I'll be there in a half an hour. And I leave. And I pull up and I text the guy, hello, I just pulled up, because he didn't answer the previous message. So he doesn't respond for like 5 minutes. I'm like, what the hell is going on? So I go up to the door. I knock. I'm like, what the hell? So he responds like 10 minutes later. He goes, call me, and gives me his number. And I'm like, what the shit is this? So I call him and I'm like, hey, where are you? And he's like, I'm not at home. And I'm like, why are you not at home? He's like, well, you said you wouldn't be free until later this afternoon.
You specified a time.
Yes. And I go, no, dude, I like the fury begins to like mount in me because I drove a half an hour to go like get this bike.
Yeah.
So
that's miserable.
Yeah, it's miserable, dude. So I'm like on the phone with him. I said yesterday that 1:30, and I arrived dead center of that. I arrived at 1:45 in the afternoon. So I said,
sure.
We had agreed on 1:30 to 2 today, like somewhere around there. And he goes, I swear to God, he goes, that was yesterday. And I go, no, but we agreed yesterday that today we would meet at that time. And he goes, yeah, but that was yesterday. And I like the fury that is coursing through my veins at this point is like immeasurable. So I'm like, okay. I'm like, I don't even know how to like react to this guy at this point. I'm like, okay. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you, dude. Like, we said this time in this place and you're not here. I'm like, how long would it take you to get home? He's like, I'm out. And I'm like, I'm out. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I was like so angry. I'm like, well, like, I'm like, I'd like to buy the bike. And he's like, I can bring it by to your house then. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, what time? He's like, I can bring it around at like 4:30 or 5. I'm like, okay, that'll be fine. Like, I'll be home then. So I send him the address. I go home at 4:30. He goes, leaving now. And I'm like, okay, this is good. Cause it took me a half an hour to get to him. It should take me a half an hour to get to me. He should be here at 5. Cause I was like doing work. I was like reading, and it's distracting when you're reading and like knowing that, you know, like
expecting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. So it's like 5, he still isn't there. 5:15, still isn't here. 5:30, still isn't here. So I text him. I'm like, yo, where are you at this point? Like, what's going on? And he doesn't respond at all. So I'm like, is this guy even coming at this point? So I basically just like, I'm like, well, whatever. So I put the phone down. He finally texts me at 6:00. He goes, I'm here. And I'm like, well, what is, like, is this how you operate your life? Like, is this how you live your, like, I was just so furious. I was so furious. I also engaged in payback anger too. He was like, cause he had the bike listed for $100. And I was like, I won't pay you more than 80. And there was nothing wrong with the bike. There was like no reason to not pay him the full price. But I was so mad. I was so mad. But I was like, I will not pay you more than 80. He's like, I drove all the way here. And I was like, I drove all the way there. Like earlier, I'm like, you wasted my time and my gas money. I'll pay you 80 for the bike. And she's like, shit, I'll take it. And I was like, I was very mad. I was extremely angry.
Yeah, that's miserable.
Yeah, I think you probably handled yourself much better than me.
See, the problem is I still wanted the bike. If I didn't still want the bike, I'd be like, you absolute moron.
Sent him the wrong address.
Yes. Like, well, not that, but like.
But close.
But let me tell you this, Kevin, I would have wanted to have done that.
Fair.
God. So yeah, that's my like fury anecdote for the week.
I had a much smaller one today, where otherwise today was a pretty peaceful day.
Today.
Yes, but I did during a break during the reading, I went to YouTube and I checked in my feed and what videos was titled. It was like Jordan Peterson just absolutely lies about climate change science.
Oh.
And what I did was I clicked out of it. I'm like,
oh,
I'm like,
shit.
I'm like, I can't indulge my anger this reading. So I decided not to indulge it because I felt like that just very prickly anger.
I felt it flare up a little bit even vicariously there. Yeah, I did.
We don't have to feed that fire. No. We are trying to embrace some of the principles of Nussbaum here.
Yes,
so
yes. But objectively, he's a piece of shit.
Yes. If you wouldn't have skipped over the one section, you would have found it's the anger's contemporary. That would have been appropriate.
Anger's are you talking
cousins
about
of anger?
Oh, I thought you were talking about transition anger.
No.
Oh, okay. You'll have to enlighten us about that.
Yeah, transition anger is like...
I meant like loathing, you know, it would be, or...
Okay.
Contempt would be the appropriate thing. You know, no anger, but he's still a piece of shit would be, you know, contempt.
Yeah. But I guess, I mean, we could just... like, it's like before, I mean, basically, okay, so we read the intro chapter, it's just the intro chapter. But the second chapter is basically all about... I found this style kind of interesting. So... Nussbaum is essentially anti-anger across the board, except for the fact that she does grant there are these sort of like, I don't know, sort of secondary instrumental uses of anger, but but they're all sort of like, you know, she endorses them to the extent that she even does with like a grain of salt. You know what I mean? She's always saying like, well, there's better alternatives. You could do much of the same thing without anger. You know, you can like, there are other, you know, either variants of anger or types of anger, like the transition anger. You know what I mean? So it's, yeah.
But interestingly, she does kind of like, she does not endorse like kind of like this stoicism necessarily,
yeah.
The stoic view of it, even though it seemed very similar.
Yeah, you know, the difference there is interesting. Blush. Yeah, because I think
like, small grains of salt.
If I was reading her right, I mean, and see like if you guys agree, I mean, basically why I thought she didn't align with the Stoics about all kind of emotions was she took like a more, not a narrowly kind of like a utility approach to anger, but she really like examined it on utility grounds of like, okay, what does this like produce in people and in relationships and in society? Yeah. And like the Stoics seem to be a little bit more along the lines of like treating all emotions on a par in a different way, where it was like, you just shouldn't be like reactively bound to your emotional states, like almost regardless of what they were. And Nussbaum seemed to be more of like, okay, is this like emotion or attitude useful?
Yeah, there was definitely some like utilitarian content in the chapter.
Yeah.
Discussion.
And she does examine, you know, anger outside of just this ability, but also just like, you know, the moral nature of anger as well.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, there is when talking about kind of status.
Yeah.
Like there's like that status kind of reducing aspect of anger, and, you know, the outcome of expressing anger or, you know, what punishments could be levied against someone through anger and that would lower their status relative yes. to oneself.
Yes.
She says in that case, it might have utility, but it's morally dubious.
Or yes.
I'd actually say it's morally bad.
So, true. Yeah. True. I definitely want to talk about like both of those kind of, because she has that like two-pronged critique of anger.
Yes.
But this was something that I didn't really kind of realize the significance of, at least at first. And I think kind of like circling back to the reading in reviewing it, like in the couple of minutes before the call, like this struck me as salient. I was wondering, okay, so it seems crucial to her disavowal of anger that it fall under a certain account, because she endorses like a specific account of anger, which I think plays actually like a bigger role than I first realized in her critique of it. So I have this from page 15. She says, agreeing, it's at the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
Agreeing with most traditional philosophical definitions of anger, I shall argue that the idea of payback or retribution in some form, however subtle, is a conceptual part of anger. She continues to say that it either focuses on some significant injury, such as murder or a rape, or it focuses only on the significance of the wrongful act of wrongful act for the victim's relative status, as what Aristotle calls a downranking. So the crucial thing here is that anger for her, it seems to involve both the sort of like, I shouldn't say emotional, because that's it. Anger for her involves like the mental
feeling,
yeah. I guess is like, there's like the feelings associated with anger, but yes. Then there's also this cognitive account.
Yes.
Or a cognitive aspect of the account, rather.
Yes.
For her, which is this, in some way, shape, or form, however subtle or however great, this payback or retribution part of anger.
Is a conceptual part of it, right?
Yes.
This isn't like a correlate. This is a part of it.
Yes. And I was thinking like, okay, it kind of dawned on me as she continued through the chapter that I think that aspect of her account of anger is fairly significant, because when she's going through all of these arguments against anger, she's saying like, we should actually work to like remove this from our lives. And so I actually think that the cognitive kind of like, I don't know, like potential for action or like desire for action in her account is really crucial, because it has to be voluntary and like cognitive, you know, thus voluntary, so that it can be something we can remove. Do you know what I mean? Because if she's just defining anger as like the raw physical perturbations or, you know, whatever, then it's like, because we read about this, what was like a little bit in Seneca, where it was like, even he fully admit that, where it was like kind of like that initial pang of anger is something that you really can't control too much, but it's like what you do with it. I don't remember if that was us or him, honestly.
I think that might have been more us. Yeah, I don't remember specifically.
But like, but that kind of struck me as like more salient than I first realized.
I mean, I definitely agreed with her because I liked in her, I think it was four cases where she describes like the, you know, one friend's kind of emotional state with respect to her friend being raped. And she kind of like disentangles much of the emotions and cognitive states involved in that. She does kind of paint a picture. We can get into those, but like, in case three, and just to clarify, case three is the case just preceding the final case, which just gives a pretty clear picture of what we would identify as anger. Case three has like, you know, the pain, the compassion, you know, for her friend, but also a forward-looking, you know, vantage point regarding like, okay, what can be done to either alleviate the circumstances, or mollify you know, her friend's anguish to an extent, but only in case four, the following case, where there was a focus on the act and the perpetrator and what must be done to the perpetrator. Only then did I recognize that as like, okay, that's anger for me.
Yeah.
So at least like my intuition is that like, I definitely buy into what she's saying here, where it's like, conceptually, I really do think like retribution is part of anger. Like you in some way,
however fleeting.
Yes.
Because it does fleet. She admits that for a lot of the cases it will be.
And can be made to sort of be fleeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it is there.
Okay. So obviously, like, you know, this is just, we're just kind of like getting concepts on the table. So it's not like there's a right or wrong answer to this, but like, what are you, cause I was trying to think about this too. And instances where, okay, I was thinking about like this sort of class of instances that I would at least sort of like pre-theoretically describe as anger that don't fit her scheme of both the kind of like cognitive aspect, at least specifically of like desiring revenge. Because I was thinking like, okay, there are a lot of cases where like something is angering me. Now moving forward, we might want to change that verb. But it, like, I was thinking about like, like really irritating behavior that you just want to stop. But it's not like, because she kind of juxtaposes like social welfare against revenge or retribution and almost kind of treats those as like, well, these are your two options. If you're feeling angry, do you know what I mean? Like if you're going to do something about it, these are your two routes. And like, I don't know. I was thinking about the instances where like I would describe myself as feeling angry, but like I do want to do something, but it's not necessarily like revenge and it's not social welfare either. Cause you would never describe it as like for the benefit of everyone involved. It's like a very egoistic, like this is bothering me. Like I just want it to stop. Like, I don't know. Have you ever had like, have you ever had someone who's like really, really annoying in like a group of people or whatever, and like otherwise, I don't know, this person is just like derailing the conversation like every time, and you're just like, it's not that you want like revenge on that person, but it's like you just want them to stop. Like, because it's clearly not like, and it's not like you can't get that off the ground of like social welfare, because it's not about that. I don't think it's about that. Like
it seems like at least it could be framed that way, but if it's like not the state of mind you're
It's really not.
It's like a personal welfare. Then
it's just egoistic. Like I just want it to stop. Like it's just annoying. And like
I don't know, that seems like a bit of transition anger to me right there.
Where let's just do something about it.
Yeah,
that's the remedy.
That seems like they're. It's not necessarily focused on any sort of like retribution. So I'd agree that'd be transition anger.
Okay, I'm happy to call it that then. I'm happy to call it that. Yeah, because it's just sort of like it's almost the feeling of like, I guess it's like stunted transition anger though, because like most of the times I feel that at least there isn't really anything to be done, because it's not like someone's doing it's not like someone's committing a wrong. You know what I mean? Like a lot of this is just almost like amoral irritation. You know, it's just like can't you like it's sometimes the sentiment of like, I don't know, can't we like can't you just like just shut up for like a few minutes or something?
I wonder if it would kind of fit some of the verbiage of when she first introduced transition anger, like this is outrageous. You're just like, it's almost like more like a commentary on what's going on.
It's almost like outraged disbelief. Like, how is this? How is this happening? Okay. No. That's actually fair. That's. I would definitely be okay with calling that transition anger. I was just thinking about that as like, well, this is a situation where I would call it anger, but it doesn't seem to fit her characterization. Where was the where I'm trying to find the thing that you brought up, Adam, where there's sort of I don't know, how did she describe it? Two sides of anger, or sort of two
kind of goals, I think is a good word. One could just be like just kind of paraphrasing the idea there, but like one goal of anger, as we've just described, is that, you know, by inflicting some sort of harm on another person, or at least imagining that, you're kind of either imagining or inflicting some harm in order to kind of like remedy this, this cosmic balance in a sense, or achieve this cosmic balance where it's like you've been wronged, but in return, if this person is wronged, either by your hand, like there will be some sort of cosmic balance struck.
The road to payback, or the road of payback, is what she calls that.
She said like it's entirely unfounded. I don't buy that. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Because I have it. This is on 29. She's talking. This is where she's kind of introducing the road of payback. She's talking about Angela, but just, you know, someone who's angry. If she chooses the road of payback, she does not embrace narrow and defective values. She values things that are really valuable, but she engages in magical thinking, which is normatively objectionable in a different way, since we all want to make sense to ourselves and to be rational. You know, and she goes on to like say that, well, this is like, you know, this is kind of culturally ingrained in us. You know, she says that there's cultural teaching that constructs patterns of sentiment that become real, but these themselves shouldn't actually give us like a robust reason. Do you know what I mean? Like just because we're wrong isn't a reason to continue being wrong.
Well, hang on. Let me kind of connect with this back a little bit, because here's what kept rattling around with me on this one. I don't think it's as magical or mystical as she's making it seem. I mean, okay, so like imagine we're all sitting around for a game night, right?
Sure.
And I don't know. I either you or Giffen with just like pretty unfair like attack. That kind of like, but it's not even like, insofar as like humorous, but more so just like mean-spirited.
Yeah, it's just like, what are you doing?
Exactly. But like, you can see that like my own conscious experience is like kind of elevated wrong. at the expense of your own. You know what I mean? So it might even be visible or invisible, but like my own experience is like almost
loving it.
is almost like wrongly elevated. You know what I mean? Like, and so,
yes.
So almost like reprisals on your part, like, it's not as though you're like, you know, kind of resetting some sort of magical balance in the world. It's more so like, kind of like an attack back or like reprisals on your part. Well, then like, you know, kind of bring me back down to earth a little bit, but we'll raise your own conscious experience back to where it should be. Mm-hmm. And like, does that make any sense? Like that perspective on it where it's just like,
yeah, I think that's would fall under like kind of like a theoretical utilitarian positive from taking that road, but like, it's not, how should I say it?
Well, but Nussbaum wouldn't say that, right? Because she says, like, even if it's just kind of a fact about our psyches, that, like, it brings pleasure to pay back. She says, like, I don't remember the line or, like, where it is, but doesn't she just say sort of something along the lines of, well, you know, we've been kind of, like, deceived, like, through a combination of our nature and our nurture, but that's not, like, a good, robust reason to continue doing it.
Yeah, but I wonder, like,
no, and that's not to say it's like a defeater.
Of course. Yeah. I think I would just like want like an explanation why in that circumstance.
Yes.
Like if someone just kind of wrongly elevates their own consciousness at your expense, yes. you can't, you know, then tear yes. them back down to where they were, you know, were at originally, and then you're raising yourself.
Well, I don't think it's that you can't. I think it's that you shouldn't just be reactively intending to do that, like
out of
it comes
anger.
From like, yeah, exactly, out of anger. Yeah, yeah. Like that may be a remedy, and it's a cultural practice to do this, like this whole cultural element of like these status developed because there probably is like a utilitarian, you know, some utility in this social structure, but you shouldn't just do it kind of like out of anger, right? If you kind of analyze it first and then kind of come to the conclusion that, hey, you need to be thwacked down, and you know that will actually be for the best, then it's like an appropriate thing. But like us just like, you know, bludgeoning you back, it would be engaging with like the negative elements of anger that she critiques.
Yeah,
even if after a few moments it would be like, okay, we could, you know, from a rational standpoint, then it's like, okay, like shut the hell up, what are you doing? You know, but it's a different spirit.
Yeah, I'm not going to push back too much on that, but I guess I didn't like the characterization of kind of like a magical or mythical kind of.
Yeah.
That I think it would be better to say like an unfounded idea. Assumption.
Yeah. It's like.
Well, I think I get what you're going for, Adam, because it's like, well, that could be this like underlying mechanism, in which case it's clearly stupid. But the idea of payback doesn't require that. Like it can operate on much more like, I don't know, less metaphysically weighty, just like local reasons.
Yeah, it can. And it's just like, once again, like there may be like other issues involved I'm about to say here, but like, I think that even applies like with the judicial system to an extent as well. I mean, like I was thinking about like the case of rape in the book, and it was like, okay, well, like while that character is raping, what's her name again in the story?
Was it Rebecca?
Rebecca. Yes, it was Rebecca.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, just kind of analyzing that situation a little bit. So the rapist is clearly kind of like elevating like his own conscious experience at the expense of Rebecca. Right. And it's like,
when you say, I'm sorry to interrupt. When you say raising conscious experience, you're not talking about like a social comparison. You're talking about just like there's a good involved for him, right?
Internal to both minds. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm saying.
Okay. Like, yeah. That's like, just clarifying.
He's like, you know, achieving like this pleasure.
Okay. I was yeah, pretty sure that's what you meant, but I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah. Yeah. Like pleasure, satisfaction, yeah.
Utility.
All the above. And I'm not even saying how long that lasts for, but it's like, you know, after the fact, Rebecca is now kind of existing at this more depressed kind of conscious experience state. And it's like, okay, if this guy is like sentenced to years in prison at this point, what does that do to his conscious experience, and respectively, what does that do to Rebecca's conscious experience? Like, in either way, in that circumstance there, it's like, it's not as much that it's some magical mythical thing, but it's like, hey, by kind of lowering his conscious experience that was wrongly obtained,
yeah,
that could meaningfully provide closure to somebody. That it's like, there are different states of conscious experience, and kind of foully obtained ones at some expense. It's kind of nice to know, like, they no longer have that, if that makes any sense.
No, I know exactly what you're saying.
Would that fall in like the status?
Well, no, it's not, because
I didn't think so as much when I was thinking about that.
Because the status downranking is always sort of with respect to like the society at large. But this, I think Adam was making a point of like purely internal to the like mental like experience of both of the individuals involved. Okay. You know, and like here's the thing, Adam, is like, honestly, I get every intuition you have, because I had the same ones reading this where I was like, well, I don't know. But like, see, I'm just thinking about how like Nussbaum would respond to that. And like,
I actually have the quote.
Yeah, do it. Do it. Yeah.
So this is on page 29 for those interested. And even if people feel overwhelming delight when they have retaliated against the aggressor, that pleasure gives us no reason to endorse or make law around such sadistic and malicious preferences. Now, we can contest that, but people can learn to feel pleased by many bad things: racial discrimination, domestic violence, child abuse, and by many silly fantasies. The thought that their cat channels the spirit of a beloved ancestor is the example. Yeah.
Little low.
Basically, she's not just endorsing it because, like, it is in our culture something like,
yeah,
it is real. Like, some people are satisfied when they discover that someone has been like put down, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, the death penalty is probably the most severe example of I can think of that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean.
I think that's a good response on her part, but the first thing that comes to my mind when I hear those examples is like, I don't want to derail us too much. I apologize.
This is core.
Center of the bullseye, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just like, I feel like the examples that she gives there, I don't feel like there's like a good, it's not like their conscious experiences were unjustly obtained and then you were then like lowering them at that point. Like, given the examples like she gave there, like, those are all like, average conscious, you know, experience, as opposed to like someone that obtained this elevated or heightened conscious experience that was unjustly obtained. And it's like, what does, you know, what do the peers or the people around them have, you know, or society at large, like what role do we play with respecting or, you know, kind of conscious experiences that were unjustly obtained? I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, so two things. One, yeah, I remember that Nussbaum responds to sort of that retort, and she said, and I'm not endorsing, I'm just reporting. She says, she just kind of doubles down on her claim that, like, just because it, like, we do feel it. But she explains more, I don't remember what page this is on, but she's just like, well, you know, that's not going to undo the wrongs. And it's like, well, again, that's true.
Is that true?
Well, I was going to say literally. In a literal sense.
Yes.
It's yeah, true. But like, I'm open to your idea that it may not be deeply true. This episode of Plato's Cave is supported by my friends at New Lane University. New Lane University is an online university that offers an Associate of Arts and Bachelor's degree in philosophy at a truly affordable price. The program is self-paced, flexible, and competency-based, allowing you to fit it into your schedule. I've had several listeners reach out to me over the years and ask about more formal philosophy training that doesn't require moving across the country or physically going back to school. If you're someone who is interested in philosophy beyond the self-taught method, New Lane University may be the perfect accessible, low-cost entryway into academic philosophy. You can earn your degree at New Lane wholly online and fully at your own pace. And because New Lane University is accredited by the Distance Education Accrediting Commission, your degree will count in all the ways that professionally matter. New Lane's learning model is different than typical undergraduate teaching. You're able to learn at your own pace, and at the end of each course, you're evaluated through a standardized interview with a course evaluator to see how deeply you've absorbed the material, not measuring your ability to merely regurgitate information like typical exams do. It's an education model built for the student, not an antiquated education system. If you're a longtime listener of Plato's Cave, I recommend researching more about New Lane University. You can do so at newlane.edu. That's newlane.edu. I'll provide links to their philosophy program in the description of this episode. Thank you to New Lane University for supporting this episode of Plato's Cave. But the second thing I was going to say was Giffen. Do you remember you didn't read the paper, but you read my referencing to the paper of Sam from last semester, Sam Rhys-Dennis. He has that paper that I wrote a response to about his ecological theory of resentment.
I do.
Like, I'm Adam, based on what you said, I think you would really like this theory of resentment, where basically Sam argues that the way that like appropriate resentment works is actually based on these relative like injuries of social strength done by, and this is, you kind of talked about this, by illegitimate wrongs. Wait, so it's
social
important.
I'm sorry, social strength was the
now it's social strength is definitely an aspect of it, but I think it's just maybe just relative strength in general.
Okay. So I'm just trying to clarify between like the status diminishing versus like the utility comparison. I think Adam was more on like the utility comparison.
And I think like Sam's argument sort of kind of walks the border between like the status and the payback branches of Nussbaum's here, because he argues that like what's fitting when we resent someone is that they have put us in a weaker position through illegitimate means. And so resenting that person is a psychological method of rebalancing the scale. And it could be, you know, resentment there, but we could easily translate the argument into like anger here, or even like retribution resulting from anger. So it's, I don't know.
I need to reread your response because I remember it vaguely, but I couldn't.
Well, my response was really just narrowly about like.
It was a 3-pager, right? That was the very confined.
So. Yeah, it was very confined, but it was also just narrowly about self-resentment and like wondering if the theory could apply there. But like, I don't know. I told you guys that, like, remember, because the whole point about the important part about his theory is that it absorbs the problem of resultant luck. Do you remember we read Bernard Williams' Moral Luck?
Mm-hmm. He certainly did.
And he's talking about resultant luck there, like luck and how things turn out. And that's typically been a problem for like people because it seems really unfair to like blame or become angry at people for things which are subject to luck and how things turn out. But basically, like his argument is that, well, luck or no luck, it actually just depends on like the degree to which we've been illegitimately harmed. And the, anger or resentment or retribution response is our way of rebalancing that, that's pretty interesting. Like, I don't know that I think that's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, like while you were talking, that was very interesting, but I was also just kind of thinking about like kind of where I stand with respect to, you know, society at large or interpersonal when I'm making this argument. Mm. And it resonates much more with me interpersonal.
Yes, me too.
Like it really does. It's like, because like you can just see it like on a game night. If I was just like to either of you, like just behaving just like unjustly, and it's like, you know, but furthermore, it's not as though like, you know, I'm saying these things but seem to be like in a dour mood. I seem to must be just like thriving off wickedness. Which is like not impossible to imagine with me, right? I mean, I'm sure you could both imagine. It's like just saying like just cool things.
Well, this is happened. With a certain one of our friends. Remember when he just imploded into, was it Giffen?
Did I implode?
No. He just like exploded his like risk army into yours. Remember, was that? And you were like, dude, why are you doing this? Yeah, you were like, that, you remember that?
There were a couple instances of that.
And he was taking glee in it.
Yeah, yeah, but it, but just
I think there was a night where Adam left the game.
That was the night.
Yeah.
Oh, I was referencing when
there's a different one
when Josh rammed. Oh no, wait! There was a time where Josh. Remember he said, "I'm going to fuck you to me," and then just like his army just rammed into mine. I was like, "Dude, what are you doing?" I was furious.
Yeah, it just ruins it. But it's just like, but you could imagine that, like, for whatever barbs I throw at you, like, you've got like a few locked in the tank. You know what I mean? Like ready to fire back, and it's just like
the ample reserves of criticisms.
Yeah, sure, but like would it be so wrong? Like if I'm like just like gloating my devilry, you know what I mean? And then just to like fire one back to bring me back down to earth, but like also to elevate yourself a bit.
I don't think it would be wrong,
but not even. But not even in terms of status, but just in terms of just like your general experience, my unjust experience at your expense. I don't know.
I think in that case a response could be justified, but it would be justified through reason. Right. I mean, if I just kind of reacted out of anger and it had the same effect, it's kind of the case where, like, you know, it just happened that way, that it was like a just response and it, you know, boosted overall utility or whatever. But the intent kind of like wasn't actually there to do that. It just happened to do that. Right. I think that would be,
you know, Jordan. I don't know what I think about this, but like, okay, here's something that could be interesting about that way of responding is it almost seems like that way of responding itself is due to like resultant luck where, like, imagine, okay, yes, okay, like, imagine you succeed. I could imagine that, well, alleviating the anger, you know, you've actually, like, you've equalized, you know, like, you ram into my army, you fuck me over for the game. I'm just like, dude, fuck this shit. I just take you out first, and you're the first one out, right? I can imagine that's like, yeah, I got it back, right? But what if, and let's say, you know, all the circumstances are the same, but obviously it's risk. So there's, you know, the rolling of the dice and everything, right? And let's just say through luck, through resultant luck, I decide to engage in that retribution. But actually, I go head on into your army, but I can't deplete you and like take you out of the game first. And then because I'm so weak, I'm taken out of the game first, right? I'd be like the fury was just like erupted. That it would be like far worse than the fury I would have endured if I had just sort of licked my wounds and, like, you know, pulled my troops back and just waited to try to, like, you know, make a move further on in the game, right? So I'm like, it seems like that response itself is actually due to like good or bad resultant luck.
Well, in that specific example, I mean, because that one, you are leaving it up to luck, that decision.
But I wonder if, like, pretty much the same thing happens with, like, a lot of the random... Yeah, you know, we can orchestrate the case however we want. You know what I mean? Like, you intend to, like, cause someone, you know, someone physically hurts you. Like imagine this in, like, we're playing, like, two-hand touch football or something, and someone, like, hits you. Instead of well you know you're like, well, I'm just gonna hit him like a little bit harder back, but like just randomness and how he's running, you just like break one of his ribs, and you're like, fuck, like this is what I wanted to do, you know what I mean? So I wonder, like, Nussbaum doesn't make this argument, but I'm wondering if she would like the idea that, like, well, you know, your response to anger, if done out of anger, is very susceptible to resultant luck in a way that, like, decreases your own chances of actually, like, restoring the balance in an equal way.
Just imprecision, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, definitely. Because this reminds me of the reading from last week. It was the quote, like, you know, anger is a lion. You can't control it. That's basically kind of the foundational critique. I think that was from a Stoic. That might have been Seneca, but I'm not sure. But no, I think she would probably endorse that.
Yeah, because I mean, it seems true. Well,
even if she doesn't endorse it, then I'll make this final point. Then I think she's still wrong in categorizing why people exhibit anger, because I think it is an additional category than just elevating one's status relatively, or for, you know, achieving some sort of cosmic balance. I do think, like, elevating one's experience at the expense of another, it just, you know, kind of depressed your experience and elevated theirs unjustly. I think that can be a reason. She might disagree with
it. Well, I think that was a reason. It's just not one that she thinks was, you know, appropriate, right? That's like the...
Well, I think Adam's pointing to like a kind of a 2.2 or a 2 point, like there's... Because Adam's talking of like, he's like payback asterisk almost. Because like, here's the thing is like Nussbaum does talk about what Adam's talking about. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of overshadowed by her attack of like the more obviously wrong way of people kind of valuing payback. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So can we paint the more sympathetic idea of payback that would be non-magical in her framing?
It's basically, I think, what Sam is kind of referring to in, like, you know, the synopsis I told you about, like, in his theory of resentment, where it's like, you know, resentment, and, you know, just, again, translate the argument, but it's like resentment is our, you know, there's nothing metaphysical going on. It's just like our local way of restoring an unjust or inappropriate imbalance in strength caused by a wrong. And when there isn't, you know, and his like argument is that like, well, even when someone does wrong us, but they're still in a very weak position, it's inappropriate to resent them for that. So he, this is a great example in the article, but he talks about like, imagine that, you're on like this kind of mountain road in California or something, and there's a biker who's just like stupidly not using the bike lane. Like there's a bike lane there and he's just not in the bike lane. So he's in the wrong, clearly, right? And you're like, shit, like, you know, like the next, like there's not, this road is going to be the same for miles and miles and miles, right? So you're like,
no, I'm not opportunity to pass.
Exactly. You're you're like, okay, shit. Like I've got to get around this guy at some point, right? Because I'm not going to like stay behind this moron who won't use the bike lane. So he's clearly in the wrong, but let's say that like you go to kind of pass him, and doing that, you go into the other oncoming lane.
Of course.
And this is why he thinks that his theory absorbs resultant luck, because you can obviously see how you're lucky and whether a car is coming or not at that point, right?
Sure.
So you swerve into the other lane to try to pass him. At that moment, though, their car turns the corner and is like approaching you. Oh shit, you have to dive back into your lane and you clip like the tire of the bike, right?
Sure.
And this is why it's also due to resultant luck. How the guy crashes is kind of lucky or unlucky too, right? Let's say that you just bump him a little bit. He just kind of skitters off the road, but never even falls off the bike. Well, Sam thinks that his argument was, in that case, it's still appropriate to get out of your car and be like, full on resentful of like, what are you doing? Like anger is like justified there at that point. Cause it's like, you have caused the greater imbalance in like you've been weakened more than him too, because you almost got into the wreck. He was in the wrong in the first place. Like he forced you into that position, right? Now, if you clip his tire and he falls and just cuts open his leg, he still was in the wrong. You know what I mean? He still forced you into that position. So all of the reasons to be resentful are there. But because of his weakened position, Sam argues that it's inappropriate to resent him because the balance there doesn't need restored. It's already been, he's already paid the price for his wrong. We should definitely
tackle that at one point. Like,
I agree.
I would definitely do that as an episode.
It's a very interesting argument.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah, that is very interesting.
I know.
Even in that example, that was actually a pretty good example.
So there's really still
like
room
for nuance to try to like weed in and out.
Such a good example. And it really shows how his theory absorbs the problem of resultant luck. It really does. Yeah.
The biker's on the ground, legs split open.
Yeah.
The resultant luck is absorbed.
Exit the car, have a magnum in your hand. It's like, what are you doing on the road? He's like in agony. I'll kill you right here and now.
I almost got clipped.
Yes.
Yeah, I almost got clipped.
And he says, like, you know, and imagine how even more resentful you'd be warranted in being if you didn't clip him at all in getting back, but like the car clipped your car. Then it'd be like just, you know, you'd be licensed in erupting at this moron. You'd be like, maybe not the Magnum. Certainly have that impulse. And yeah, so I don't know. Like, I honestly, I get what you're saying, Adam, and I think I've shown my cards that I like agree. There's more to the payback than Nussbaum, kind of focuses on. I won't say brings up, because she does bring it up, but she doesn't focus on that. Yeah.
It is opened and closed in that one paragraph where I said the quotation. Although I'm actually reading it now. I'll read just the beginning of the paragraph, because that basically summarizes the entire thing. Payback thus often has a psychic function. If people are culturally sold on the idea that payback is good, they will feel real satisfaction when they get it. Often this satisfaction is called closure. And then she goes into like the nuance and then the examples of it not necessarily good, even if it's real. That's all she says on it, I'm pretty sure, just on that one page, 29.
Yeah, should not make us embrace a deception is her word. So she literally does think it is. I mean, it is a literal deception there.
I'm leaning a little bit more in her direction in like regards to my feelings on this. Yeah. I do think it kind of deserves some extra reflection. Like I made a note at on this paragraph, like she's definitely not just like kind of endorsing whatever cultural practice we were brought up in.
It's true. And it's like, I here's the thing is like, I'm very, very drawn to both ideas where it's like, I don't know, to be honest, like, can I think of a single time in my life where I've done something out of payback and it's honestly gone well? Like, I mean, maybe the example of like my bike today was like, you know, I kind of paid him back in the form of like, you know, I forced him to come down from $100 to $80, and like there was no reason to do that other than payback for like him wasting my time and gas. Yeah.
I mean, even then, that has a utilitarian.
Wait, what'd you say, Adam?
It felt pretty good too. right at the wrongs a little bit.
I was like, a magnum would have righted it.
Adam's just
the like scales.
Writes your response book.
It's just like. For me, it's just like I've never bought into the idea of a perfectly balanced scale. I'm just like
someone's gotta lose.
Ain't never been a scale I can't shoot.
It's like let it be weighted toward me.
Pulls the trigger.
Someone cuts me off, I just derail them at this point. Shoot the whole card dead. I'm just
don't do the whole family.
No one crosses me.
Let that be a disincentive towards everyone else, or not.
It turns to like the 6-lane highway. Everyone just begins firing like into the 6-lane highway.
Or like, yeah, given my logic though, like whenever I'm just like, crossed like that. There was like such a decrease in my conscious experience in order to balance it out. I have to kill them all.
Closure can only be obtained through massacre at this point. Shooting into pedestrians.
It's like such an unstable system though, where like even that too like leaves him still thirsty for blood. So like his whole philosophy is like at the first, like you think it's like a one and done philosophy where like he's wrong, you just like kill every person he can
find. Endless spiral, like you made me waste bullets.
Exactly.
The final
closure
person,
so what, elusive.
What town are you from?
He's bleeding out.
I was like Latrobe. I'm just like, the final shot. I'm like, on to the town. I killed everybody from their town. Yeah.
What did you? Okay, so as to the other branch, the road of status. The tendency, you know, what does she say about this? You know, she says, this is kind of a pernicious tendency to see everything that happens as about oneself and about one's rank. This seems very narcissistic. It loses the sense that actions have intrinsic moral worth, that rape is bad because of the suffering it inflicts and not because of the way it humiliates the friends of the victim. I'll continue. If wrongful injuries were primarily downrankings, they could be rectified by the humiliation of the offender. And many people certainly believe something like this. But isn't this thought a red herring, diverting us from the reality of the victim's pain and trauma, which needs to be constructively addressed. And so, okay, I thought, and this actually came up in Seneca, but maybe we didn't discuss this portion of the reading. But Nussbaum brings it up later. I can't find where, but she has this idea that, like, okay, imagine someone who was like, Seneca talks about this in these terms, like, imagine someone who was so sort of like psychologically imperturbable and unflappable and certain of their own sort of like value as a human being that they like weren't
justified value, you mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, of course. No, but just like, you know, like the very like, you know, positive and you know, there's like innocuous, if not beneficial, stance of like, you know, no, nothing anyone can do can like devalue my worth, you know, like nothing that anyone can do to me can do that. And the idea is that, like, okay, if you're like truly someone who has embodied that, then you really can't suffer status slights. And I kind of actually like that idea in response to like being angry over like and responding via the road of status. I don't know what you guys thought about that.
I'm sorry, you liked what?
That response to like not getting angry and responding to status slights or like, you know, kind of leveling
through self, like justified self. She uses a phrasing, I can't remember what it is, like human worth, human value?
Something like
that. Something close to that, not quite that.
Yeah, yeah. She says something here, actually. Next page, bottom of 30. I am saying something very radical, that in a sane and not excessively anxious and status-focused person, anger's idea of retribution or payback is a brief dream or cloud, soon dispelled by saner thoughts of personal and social welfare. She's almost pointing to this like person who is just interested in like making things better for everyone, including themselves and the victim all the time. I can imagine, I don't know, I can imagine something along the lines of like a Susan Wolf moral saints critique to that idea, though. You know, where this like this obsession with always sort of maximizing the best moral outcome there puts other values in a strangely like impersonally subservient position to that. I don't know. Overall, I actually did like that, though.
No, I actually do. When you phrase it that way, that it makes it clear.
I actually really, I was just kind of trying to think about it like myself, and it's like, well, I don't know, like that kind of, I don't know whoever like came up with this mantra, but it's like, well, if it's usually said about worrying, but like I can imagine it applied to anger too. It's like, well, like if you can't do anything about the situation, then like why worry? Because then you suffer twice. And it's like, if you can do something about the situation, then just do it, and then you don't have to worry.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of the same thing with anger. It's like, well, if like you can just fix the situation, then fix it. In which case, why get angry and like suffer through that? And if you can't fix the situation, then like, well, I don't know, like, what are you going to get angry over? Like, it's just a kind of shit luck that it happened or whatever. It's just a shitty situation. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Just move on.
Yeah. Honestly, like I think I'm the least prone to anger amongst the three based on our last conversation. And I think that is actually like a pretty good description of like the attitude that I generally take, right? Like if you kind of view this is like it's a little like the utilitarian, to be honest. Like I definitely like incorporated some of my economic background into like the structure of the framework, but like if the anger is just like kind of a negative, just don't embrace the negative. Right, like you remove a loss, you know, which is gain.
It's true.
I definitely take it's that true. Mindset. Like, if there's nothing you can do, like getting angry will just be like inflicting suffering upon yourself.
It's kind of true, and like the Buddhist idea of like suffering twice actually seems to ring really true.
That's a great like. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would like to get a quote. That's like a frameable quote.
It's really good, actually, because it's like it's true.
The
actually.
Warrior suffers twice. That like the quote. It's something close like to that.
It's something like that, where it's like, well,
yeah.
You suffer the wrong, and then you also suffer your reaction to the wrong. It's like
precisely.
Why actually do that? It's like it's not clear.
Yeah.
It's really
the evolutionary reasons.
just embrace like the merely descriptive, like elevate it to the normative.
I think though
Darwinian.
We'd have to look where in the book she said this, because I forget exactly. But it's not that the nature of anger is purely like pain, though. Like there is,
that's true. Yeah.
There as well, where in the sense, insofar as it is forward looking, like there is plane. I mean, like pleasure. Pleasure. There are planes that exist.
It's a bird. No, it's a plane.
Let us gather.
No,
but there is pleasure in you know, in just imagining what could be meted out. You know, to the perpetrator. And then there is, like, you know, just in the midst of the anger, that is a true fact. And that resonated with me, where it's like,
it is true.
That is why, like, I'm like a rageaholic to an extent. It's not because, like, I'm a pure masochist. There is something to it that is like pleasure.
It's true.
No, I know what you mean. What I was trying to interject with was like kind of the idea of like the hope for like, you know, the anger can like spawn like a hope. That's kind of a positive thing. But I like your
Adams is much darker than that.
Yes, it is. More I was going to say, I had too positive of a framing.
It's true.
No, yeah, I mean, I'm just like that is like my nature. Like, I like what
endorse. Like,
but there was like the anecdote, like in the book of, what was it? Was it the 1988 presidential debate?
Dukakis,
yeah. Where he was asked about, you know, like what if his wife would have been like raped?
His daughter, yeah.
Was it his daughter?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, but
would you favor the death penalty for someone who raped your daughter? Yeah.
He's like, I am on record for saying no, you know, very soberly.
It is just like, it's like, I just like imagined like whenever I read that, where I'm like, I want to preface that, you know, with regard to our judicial system, you know, as a third party entity, like, you know, we shouldn't be meting out the death penalty to, you know, and I can give you a whole slew of reasons, you know, why I did it. But personally, it's like,
yes.
First, I'd cut off his hands.
Yes.
And then I'd cut off his arms.
Death is too kind.
Yes.
And punch out his eyes and rip out his teeth.
It's true. It's
like put him back in to rip him out again.
Because like there is like the theoretical and like how we actually construct institutions, and then there's just like our nature and like my nature. Like I would torture the guy to death.
Yes. So, yeah. It's true. Yeah. Did you apparently
a strong endorsement of his own feelings?
The unexamined.
Like the Darwinian framing. It's like, I do feel them, and it do feel good.
That could be like my ancient Greek, just like a philosopher name, just like Adam, the unexamined. He's got like a weak chin, just like in like, like a marble bust in there.
Hyperbole, of course, but nevertheless, no, I definitely lean towards like the kind of like sober-minded analysis. Like, obviously in extreme situations I would feel like extremely angry and, you know, cut off the hands and feet, you know, etc. But like I think I've developed a pretty good habit of kind of just like reflecting so like close enough that like maybe they're not all transition angers, but like the you know, the time between, it can be repressed pretty quickly, you know.
You definitely seem more prone to the transition anger than Adam or I.
I haven't invoked any strange beheadings or torturings yet, so.
Yeah, Adam.
I do feel good.
I do feel that, and I do feel good.
That's so funny.
That's very good. What did you guys think about her... She had a discussion of the instrumental roles of anger. There were three. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I wanted to respond because Giffen, you. Yeah. Okay. So like, so Nussbaum says there's basically three possible ways to respond to anger. You can endorse like the road of status leveling. You can endorse the road of payback. And then she says the third possible thing, which is what she recommends,
yeah,
is the welfarist approach. Basically, in a, you know, she gives the caveat, I'm not talking about narrow utilitarianism. I'm talking about, you know, she's not, I'm not saying that all goods are commensurable.
Are
commensurable rather. Okay. So, okay. Here's like the only, I don't know. Here's the only thing that I kind of have about that response. It's like, look, at the end of the day, do I think that she's right? Yes. Do I wish that I could be more like that? Yes. Here's like my only reservation though. This is like the same reservation I had when we discussed the adoption of the objective attitude.
Right.
In its totality. And now obviously that's a different project, right? Because that's sure. That's sort of all reactivity. And this is a very specific one. Yeah.
One specific one. The vehement passion specifically.
It's true. So
the bloodthirsty one.
the bloodthirsty, which I endorse.
Adam is like Pharaoh, let the rivers run red.
I'm thirsty.
My toe has been stubbed for the last time, Barbara. It's a massacre from nothing. Anyways, Jordan, please continue. You're talking about the problem with her third road.
I don't know.
Similar to what you felt about the objective attitude.
Yeah, she even references, there's this paper by Bernard Williams that we didn't read for the Wolf series, but we did read in class. And it's like, okay, he kind of has this like amazing phrase about one thought too many. And I'm wondering if that thought applies here, where it's like, okay, I don't know. I'm wondering about the person who truly embodies her suggestion to embrace like this welfarist approach to anger.
Sure.
And I don't know. It's like there's
this is totally a moral saints thing.
This is totally a moral saints thing.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
And I'm wondering if like there's and okay, here's the thing. There's something that is like prima facie off-putting, but I don't know if this is something that I should just get over. If like this is like if I'm falling into Adam's, you know, me thinks, me do, me endorse kind of game.
Boulders who endorses in the vocabulary. I'm sorry, Adam. Obviously, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, obviously.
It is my nature.
And you do endorse it.
I do.
Me nature, no, me nurture.
I'm wondering, like,
it would be very off-putting to discover a person who like was just consistently like that, you know, very well. That would be quite off-putting to the point where like it would actually like to the moral saints argument to somewhat, it would be like, I don't know if I would want them as a friend, just because it would be like a heavy constant reminder of like my own fallibility in the face of like a god, right?
Yeah, well, that would also be like more than that. I was almost thinking about something. I was thinking about like what we were talking about last time. I kind of floated this idea of like vicarious anger, or like, you know, anger when you're like, you know, you're like a friend is telling you about, you know, my example was when Adam got fucked over in his lab. Like, okay, she even talks about this somewhere, and I made a note because I wanted to bring this up. Come on. God damn it. I know where on the page spatially the note is written. Like, I know it's in the bottom margin. I don't remember the page. God damn it. Oh, I found it. Okay. this is on 34. Bishop Butler, actually, it seemed like he was kind of talking about something similar to what I was talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. Because so I'll just read from the top of 34. So she's talking about Bishop Butler, for he suggests a good role for anger that needs to be pondered. According to Butler, who finds anger pretty appalling in general, it nonetheless has this value. It expresses our solidarity with wrongs done to our human beings, done to other human beings. Now she rebuts this, and she does it first on empirical grounds, but then she moves to normative grounds, and she says, you know, even to the extent that Butler is correct, however, what he does not explain is why solidarity is aided by the desire to inflict pain and suffering on the wrongdoer. Now, and she again, which, you know, which is essential to anger, And she says, we could agree that the disruption of social order is bad and that the desire to protect people from wrongful damages is good without buying into the payback idea or thinking magically that returning pain for pain achieves anything. And okay, it's like, well, sorry, this is like, it's okay. Well, like, you know, first of all, I'll grant that that's true, but that's really, she's focusing on like these very specific, like almost ways that anger can be expressed, right? It's like, okay, like here's the thing is when Adam tells me about, or, you know, whoever, like, you know, sorry, I kind of like the hiccups. Okay, you tell me about something that like happened to you and I'm like, you know, and you're just like furious over it. And I, and my natural, excuse me, God damn it, reaction is to be like, yeah, that person deserves the gallows or what, you know, like we say that all the time. Like, and we don't actually mean like, I wouldn't actually hang that person like for what they did. Right. But it's like, well, like imagine the type of person who never responds at all in that way. They just like, okay, here's later in that paragraph, she says the best form, this is a claim that I just flat out disagree with. Okay. Listen to this. The best form of solidarity with other human beings would surely focus on doing something constructive to promote human welfare, not on a project doomed to incoherence and futility. And I think I flat out disagree with that where, okay, tell me if I'm wrong, but both of you imagine that you've just told me about some sort of scenario. Just independently, you know, you call me, you're like, dude, like you have like a couple minutes. I'm like, yeah, what's up? And you're like, dude, listen to this. And you just tell me about like this way in which someone like fucked you over, right? Okay. Imagine that I immediately just respond. Well, like, okay, so the way to maximize utility here would be like you'd be like, okay, like, yes, I want to get to that. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't you actually be extremely frustrated if the very first thing I said was skipping straight to like a social welfarist? Would that be? I was thinking about that
like strict
too.
Strict remedy or something. Like that.
I would be so annoyed if someone did that.
Well, I'm interested to know about Finn's perspective, like as
true,
like the story about, you know, your encounter today of just madness on a Facebook Marketplace. Like, Giffen, did you feel like any kind of like commiserating anger, you know what I mean? Like was there any anger that kind of welled up in you like as you heard that story, or like what was your experience? Because for me it was like I felt the rage boil like as I was hearing. So
I don't know if I got like fully to the transitional anger. I used to and still kind of do have like a pretty long commute. And I was just imagining basically like a full hour just drained from my day, like on a weekday too. Yeah. That was
it's extremely annoying.
Yeah, it was like, definitely. Like, I was feeling some sympathy there. I'm not sure if I got to like full blown boiling blood anger, but like I mean
sympathy,
because like for me it wasn't just like kind of like a blanket statement of like that's outrageous, you know. Ooh. Like I'm like with like
respect. It was anger.
Yeah, I'm like that guy should be flogged.
I don't think I got there, to be honest. No.
Now, okay, wait. When you say you don't think you got there, was there? So there's two senses of there that you could mean. Obviously, Adam and I love to be, you know, hyperbolic about yes. What people deserve. Now, obviously, I know that that's not the sense in which you mean there. But there's another sense of there is. Did you have, now I'm not saying he truly did deserve it, but did you have the reaction of, yeah, that guy, like he, like that idiot, he, like he deserved something, like was there any of that feeling?
I thought the discount was deserved.
Wait.
You got like the $20 off.
Oh.
So yeah, that was like the kind of payback, right? So in that sense, but I thought it was like, I also thought it was just, to be honest, like. An hour of time, $20, like, okay.
I'm ready to endorse any theory that says that was just.
this kind of goes back to my earlier point of just like just like it's like, yeah, there was a little bit of payback there, but I mean
it's true.
It seemed like the scales were righted to an extent.
I agree. I actually felt that the scales were righted there, like 100%. I just don't know if like it was like an anger induced, you know, like
yeah, it's like a cold sense of justice or something, you mean? Like
I wouldn't say I wouldn't say cold, but it was like a non-angry.
Yeah, colder.
Maybe like
colder
just
than the
satisfaction,
blooded rage of Adam.
Like moral satisfaction is a good way to put it. Yeah,
there was moral satisfaction. I definitely felt moral satisfaction.
Like I just think that like
I was literally imagining my commute while I was like you were telling that story. I was like, I can't imagine, because you were describing it at a time of the day when it's like, you know, trafficky.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't too bad, regardless, it was
regardless.
Still an hour.
No, I mean that's what driving, kind of got me going, right?
of course. And it's just like, well, here's the thing: is like, okay, it seems like it's a psychological fact for me that if I'm telling you guys about that, and you just jump straight into, you know, this like, well, I hope that you calculated that if you expressed anger to him, you'd be less likely to still obtain the bike in the end. I'd be like, just shut up. Like that's not like, do you know what I mean? It's like, yes, we can get to there. You know what I mean? It's like, we can get to there.
No, I get it. I definitely am less inclined to, I'm less demanding of like the what I guess it would be like the,
yeah.
How did you frame it? It was like the
like
the other person needs to feel the rage, right?
Yeah. As opposed like, to honestly, like, here's the thing: is like, I know that that's what I want to happen, and when Adam and I talk about these things, that's how it does happen. We both,
I think you
like,
guys play off each other very, I think we, extremely I think in this case. Because like I'm thinking like in my conversation with like other friends that I like talk to on the like physically on the phone, and this is the example. Like, I you know get told and tell like you know shitty things that happen, but like I don't always like there are some cases where it's like if it's really bad, it's like pissed, but then other times like I don't expect rage or like anger, the phrase I don't expect like actual anger.
I literally get disappointed if the other person does not match my level, and here's the thing, it doesn't last long, because it actually doesn't. Like, here's the thing, and this is now, here's the problem, I don't know if this is like, now what I'm about to say could be like proof of how unhealthy Adam and I are, or is it like
on record?
or is it like kind of almost like an argument that like for more of a pluralistic way to view this, where there's like many ways to accomplish the same thing? Because like, okay, when Adam or when I'm fucked over, I call Adam, I know what's going to happen. He is going to match my level of anger.
I'm going to call for heads.
Yes.
Within 30 seconds, even if it's just like,
it's true.
He's like, it doesn't matter how bad Jordan is. Like, 30 seconds in, I'm already calling for heads.
It's true. It's true. And it's like, but here's the thing is like, there's something actually about being able to experience that anger with someone else that it's almost like it allows me to, like, I don't know what the right word is, like, deal with the anger is not the right word, but it's like, there's something about that interaction that actually allows me to, like, fully move past the anger. And then we always follow up that, you know, one person matches the other's level of rage. We both indulge that for a few minutes, calling for heads, you know, maybe more twisted things. And then
maybe.
Always.
Always. And then what happens after that is, you know, there's a conversation about just like, well, you know, the most socially welfare kind of thing to do, right? It's like, well, you know, well, you could approach it this way, you know, kind of think about that, like, that doesn't seem great. And it's like, well, we could approach it this way, right? So it's like, okay, Nussbaum wants to...
you know what I'm reminded of? I'm sorry. You go on.
Interrupts with the thing he was going
to
say.
I wanted to get this reference right. I'm sorry.
Let me actually interject as well. And I think that is a good point, Jordan, because a lot of the time I do feel like, at least in company, my anger does shift to transition anger. Like, it does.
Yeah.
But I tend to indulge the original anger. Like, I'll just... Yeah. Fire until it's like a burning furnace, and then I'll let it dry out. And then afterwards, I'm like, the situation. Let us maximize utility and social welfare.
Yeah, so, I what I was gonna say is, this reminds me of, it was the Sartre quote. where like you chose in going to like that advisor, know what you were getting.
Yes, yes.
You chose that. What I would say is I think it is a little bit reflective of your, you know, your specific friendship.
Minds.
Yeah, I'll be generous. There's a fitness there.
Here's my question though. Like, okay, maybe I'm just still on the pluralism kick from like last podcast series, but like, is it true to say that like one way of dealing with that anger is like truly morally better than the other?
I think it's fair to say that there are like, you know, multiple paths that might be like, you know, equal to moral.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, like even what you're describing, like, you know, there's, I mean, you basically almost said it, like there is some like you actually like genuine utility to the product of kind of like being the hyperbolic and like getting that reaction. Then
this it allows so you
like kind of like, well, yeah, no, yeah. I mean,
it brings like from very a, funny.
It brings you from piss to like, you know, a state of enjoyment, right?
Yes,
like,
it's so true. That,
like that's I think a good way to describe it, like, in a kind of rational way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not willing to like say that specifically. Maybe take out the calling for heads part, but you know, just the general act, you know,
that's a crucial aspect.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not sure how I'd deal with anger if I wasn't calling for the vicious death of somebody. But.
Okay, well, either way, I mean, I think you can. Okay, it's so hyperbolic. It's hard to say it's equal moral. I don't know if I can, but like the project of like expecting like, you know, an equal reaction. That's like a, you know, a reasonable social process. I'm not willing to call that like immoral necessarily, because I know it's like in jest and hyperbolic. And it's a, you know, a friendship, you know, strengthening thing.
The problem,
the mutual though, calling like... for heads,
dude.
Is it always hyperbolic?
Good lord.
Legally speaking, yes.
To any judge listening to this,
yeah, it's actually a judge listening to this. Make any sense? I will act as a executioner and the judge.
But here's the problem, though: is like, honestly, I've gotten to the point where if I'm here's like, I don't know, is this wrong? Is this like maybe not morally wrong, but is just this like, you know,
in some way, anyway, wrong?
Maybe even just practically, like, I am now like, there are some times where, you know, if I'm having some of these conversations with other people, you know, it's not Adam. Part of me feels like, it's a terrible, like, it's a terrible expression.
I have to imagine Adam gives the most explosive response, correct?
Well, yeah, that phrasing doesn't help. I was going to say, I almost feel like blue-balled when someone doesn't give you that response. I almost feel like you haven't gotten the anger out in some sense. You know what I mean? Like,
sorry, Jordan, I know you're talking about me.
No, I'm actually
blue-balling you like that.
Well, not in that way. But like, there's some, well, it's different actually, because I've obviously talked with you about things, but like, it
do you feel like my response was inappropriate,
but,
or is it just kind of like
no, it's actually because like when I'm talking with you, I almost like don't even have that expectation. So it's like, I almost derive like pleasure from like being the solely hyperbolic one when I'm talking with you, because like, you know, you'll react like, you know, with a little bit like, well, I'm not sure the heads are warranted.
I'll be like, dude, that's ridiculous, like, yeah, I like, you know, and sympathize or like have an example that like where it happened to me, and like, you know, I'll get pissed, but like,
but the weird thing is that like I've almost come to expect that response from you, and so it doesn't feel like bad. But then like there are other people who I like, I don't know, like I want that response out of them for whatever reason. And then when they don't give it to me, I feel like I'm like,
actually, that's fair. Because if it's someone who like would do that, but isn't, you're like, wait, hold on a second.
Yeah,
like, what's the problem here?
Yeah. Like, why can't we do this
now? What's different about this situation?
The language around this is crazy.
I know.
Can't we do this?
The mind is willing, but
it's like, I don't know. But I don't know. Like, a part of me thinks like Nussbaum could see all of that and just use it as like grist for her mill. Like, yeah, you shouldn't even be indulging in like this stoking of the anger flame at all.
But even I'm not even sure, because what you described is actually more of like a transition from anger to like kind of like almost a joy.
There's this twisted joy, and like it's true, because like when I tell you guys about shit, like it's funny.
Especially if it's hyperbolic, because the thing is, if we actually put forward like reasonable like reprisals, you know what I mean, where I was just like filling Jordan's head with like you know, sabotage his car, or like
I was just about to say that, because like,
you know, because that would be like, that would almost be like, it is way more wicked, because I'm like, reasonable things you could do to like cause this person suffering, you know,
slash his tires,
yeah as opposed to just like, you know, he should be strung up.
Honestly, now that you've mentioned that, like that actually might be an example of transition anger, because like it's no longer directed at like the act, right? Like, you're kind of like transitioning in a way into kind of like a social, you're talking about your rage almost at that point, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of spitballing here. This is your experiences, but like, right, at least in her framing, it's like there needs to be the act and the focus, right? And it seems like in the like this discussion you're describing, you're almost like shifting that to a point where, like, I mean, it's still obviously like related to the like anger, but it's like almost being shifted a bit. I don't know if that's like, you know,
I agree with that. It does get shifted. Like the perspective does change, because obviously like the retribution discussed is just so unwarranted that it becomes humorous.
Like, exactly.
It's humorous because, like, you know, like someone did something wicked.
No, and
like the most like, you know, torturous pain for them. And then by the end of it, we're just cackling, and it's just like, it doesn't warrant that, but you know. Yeah.
Here's why I'm questioning I'm questioning if that's actually transition anger, though, because, okay, so like she talks about transition anger here on page 35 so she says there are many cases in which one gets standardly angry first, thinking about some type of payback, and then in a cooler moment heads for the transition. But there are at least a few cases in which one is there already. The entire content of one's emotion is how outrageous, something must be done about this. Let's call this emotion transition anger. So, she's kind of talking about two different things here, right? If you experience like the two stage, the anger and then the transition, they're two distinct things. Or sometimes, like she just said, they can just arise simultaneously. And it sounds like Giffen, you're closer to a lot of the simultaneous arisings than Adam and I are.
I'd say that's fair. Closer. Definitely not perfect.
Yeah.
To reiterate, I do experience anger, but I definitely don't like feed it.
Could a robot experience anger? Could an algorithm feel pain?
Allow me to reference my short and long-term memory to determine your answer. No.
So it's like, I don't...
Well, I think Kipin is right that we end up with transition anger.
Well,
it took me a while to get to that point.
Well, we end up at the transition. But do we end up with...
I think we end up with transition anger, like,
really?
In conversations much of the time, where it's like by the end, after feeding that fire, which is just anger, like at the end, there is like some resolution, which is all about forward thinking. Like, recognize like what was done or what was said is still outrageous. At that point, I don't feel like the same like blood curdling sense. It's more so just like there was some catharsis beforehand, but now I'm in a point where it's like I can recognize how outrageous the situation was, and then just provide, you know, general feedback on how to improve social welfare.
The reason why I was questioning if it's transition anger, though, is because when we do this, at least, I feel like it's almost two distinct stages experientially for me. It's full-blown anger. We indulge it. And then it doesn't transition to like transition anger. It's like just this transition where there's no anger, actually. Like whenever we're discussing like what's to be done, it's actually almost affectless. So that's why I'm wondering if it's like transition anger, or we've actually just transitioned fully into like, you know, something along the lines of like the objective attitude.
That's fair. That is fair. I'm not sure, to be honest. This is, I mean, obviously this is you two are the ones in this example, but I thought at least it was a possibility. Because it, I mean, obviously, like, I don't think it's like egregious. I mean, if you meant it, it would be egregious.
Sure. And let me be clear that not all of my anger is.
And I every individual instance of inconvenience in your life.
Because I definitely do experience like pure transition anger. I think it's just less frequent. It's hard to come up with an example on the spot, but like I definitely do. But I'm wondering if like, I don't know, what if like I could imagine someone arguing against Nussbaum and saying like, well, actually, like by not engaging in the anger in the way that, you know, Adam and I are prone to do, you don't let it burn out in a certain way. Like if you just jump straight to like the social welfare kind of transition anger, you're almost like stifling it in a way. Now what she would probably respond like, well, but if it dissipates, you just didn't have to go through the middle ground, which she would think is like bad. But I don't know. I really am like reluctant to say that those experiences are bad, like even amorally. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I don't actually know that like when I call Adam just reporting some wickedness and he just indulges that to the fullest extent. Like, I don't know, Adam, like, is that a, what do you think? Like, is that like experientially?
Asking hard? Adam.
Well,
yeah. Another Sartre. what do you think, Adam?
I think it's all right.
I want to hear your thoughts.
I know. I mean, here's the thing. I think the problem is like it does bleed into other patterns of being as well, where it's like if I do indulge anger in that sense, like I tend to in other areas of my life too. So true.
Anger is a lion.
Yeah, if it didn't bleed over like it does, I think there'd be nothing wrong with that behavior. But it's the fact that like I do enjoy those experiences where we feed like the you know those flames, and then you know at another part of the week I'll see a video like I referenced earlier, which is just like you know absolute drivel by someone like Peterson, and I'm like, here we go again.
Let's top off like, that rage.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like I haven't gotten my daily rage. Like it'd be nice to, you know. But to like once again today, I was just like, I'm gonna avoid that, and for the better. To be honest, I'm glad I didn't watch that video. Would have left me mad.
You know, I also wonder if you know because you know these conversations, if they're not one-offs, they tend to be about sort of recurring people, right, in one's life. And it's not always the case that you can like just cut them out. So I also wonder if Nussbaum might say that like, well, the danger of like doing that kind of, you know, indulging in vicarious anger is like for both parties, but in different ways. It's sort of soiling the relationship that you have, you know, pretend that I'm reporting wickedness to you. It makes it harder for me to like almost leave the wickedness behind if I've spent 20 minutes like talking about how wicked it truly was with you. And it makes you kind of, if you either haven't met the person or have, but don't know as much as me, you know what I mean? Like it makes you only have a know bad
something
bend.
That was, yeah. You call for heads when they're actually just like, it's like a small gaffe they made.
You meet them, you know, like, I've called for your head.
Shake their hand. I've heard so much about you.
Oh, wicked things. I assure you.
Stub my toe. It's like all physical matter must disappear. Honestly, for me, it's a well-evolved primate, of course. my quickest transition to transition anger would be honestly just encounters like with inanimate objects. You know, it's like
I literally can't do anything about that.
Yeah, like if I stub my toe, I don't know if you guys get this. Maybe I'm not that too well-evolved of a primate. It's like the instinct to like pick the thing again. Like if I you never get that where you just like
no, I definitely have. I've never had that with a toe, but I've had it with other analogs.
Yeah, you can imagine.
Where you just want to break it. You know what I mean?
It's true.
I don't know. Like at least for like the last like few years, I haven't gotten that at all. Where it's like, if I stop, I'm like,
Fuck.
I'm like, I'm gonna break this door. So
no property destruction anymore.
I used to be like that a little bit when I first started working on the car, on my old car. I would have little flashes like that where like I would I would just strip a bolt and I would want to just like beat the metal until it was like crumbled and deformed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like your mind. Yeah. No, honestly, I've even done that.
But I'm actually like, I don't know if this is an aspect of like doing like working on the car more and more, but now my experience is much more like Adam's, where if I strip a bolt, I'm just like, fuck. And it's just like, it's not even anger. It's almost more of just like
frustration.
Frustration. Yeah.
It's just like a shit feeling. So it's like, God damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more, it's
I feel that replaced a lot.
By frustration. Yeah.
I feel so. Frustration a lot. Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah, we're told.
Yeah, but I just don't really feel anger at, like, you know, inanimate objects at this point. I mean,
no.
I think there exceptions do come up. Like, I've gotten furious at like entities that no specific person can actually be like the face of. Like, for example, like last fall I got furious whenever I called tech support and I got a robot. And the robot wasn't like understanding anything I was saying.
Yes.
Me. And like, and I was furious the entity itself. Like, not the software, not the robot.
Not the person making the decisions.
The voice.
I was furious at the company. I was just like, I'm like, what a foul company.
Yes.
To give this, you know, crap product where you can't actually talk to anybody, you gotta just like, you know, just voice commands to the robot. But things like that will still, will still make me furious. But yeah,
I wonder if Nussbaum might say that. Like, I wonder if she would like turn to you and me, Adam, and say like, okay, like look at how you've transitioned from. You've gone from like more kind of like apish anger to more like a transition anger in inanimate objects. And like, okay, one theory about why we do that is because we understand that nothing good comes from like just, you know, like, you know, like the door doesn't shut, you just destroy the door, like nothing.
I've never done that, by the way.
So. Clarify for the audience.
Yeah.
Calling for heads and completely endorsed. Destruction of a door.
It is true.
So I'm I've never stopped to the door and then ripped the door from its Never done
that. No people who do that, though. Like giant holes in doors.
It's really true.
That kick. Yeah, because, you know, for no reason.
Like, yeah, you think about like a stereotypical like dad from the 50s or whatever, you know,
rageaholic.
Like, yeah. He comes home just like plaster, just like just stupid door, just punches like a hole.
Yeah, no, I mean, legitimately. Yeah,
it's true.
No, I do not do that.
Or people do this. Craig almost did this. This happens on the golf course a lot, where if someone hits a bad shot, they just beat the club until it's bent. It's like. And it's like, well, you haven't really accomplished, you know what I mean? Or people
that'll improve your shot.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's like, it's nothing wrong with the, you know what I mean? So it's like, so Nussbaum might say, okay, like, look at this. Like, when you indulge this type of anger, nothing good comes from it. Years and years of understanding that. And we think that there's something actually like intellectually deficient about people who just do tear the door off.
Yeah.
It's true.
Helps tail on the threshold, it rips the door off.
It's true. So I wonder if Nussbaum would say, like, okay, well, like, look at how that transition happens for inanimate objects, and then ask yourself, like, isn't this true for animate objects, like, or, you know, people? Isn't it still the case that, like, all of the logic holds? Produces bad outcomes. You should be learning from this over the years and, like, go to transition anger much more often. I don't know. I'm imagining.
I think that's pretty fair, though. I think that's a pretty fair you know, hypothetical where she would be responding to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, we're luckily evolved apes and are recognizing that it has had like some positive impact. So, it's not a far stretch. Imagine she would recommend that for, you know, expanded set of circumstances.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah. That's the largest extent of everything that I had to say. I enjoyed her discussion about the poking holes in the idea that God gets angry. I did enjoy that section a lot.
That was actually quite entertaining.
It was. I loved the idea that, like, yeah, it seems kind of right that, like, if you buy, I love this was kind of this was an inchoate argument. She didn't really develop it, but like, I loved the idea of thinking like, well, if we're drawn to the idea that like someone who's like you know, kind of supremely but justifiably confident in their self-worth, like, wouldn't need status leveling anger, and then she clearly demonstrates how like the only way that like we can really kind of, you know, make God angry is through status like imbalances. Then it's like, oh,
you can only slide God through status,
and if you buy those two premises, then it follows that God wouldn't able to be like kind of supremely confident in himself, which is actually like the basis of this Chris Matheson book I reference all the time to you guys, where he tells the story of the Bible from God's perspective. We still need to do that. That's such a good,
I actually bought that book on your recommendation. I
dude,
haven't read
it's
it yet.
So fucking good. We have to do it as a podcast sometime.
It was based on a true story, and then it scratched out as the based on the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard the name of the books.
The story of God.
That's it.
So, I think, yeah, it's one of my favorite books of all time. It's
I bought that on your recommendation. I just haven't read it yet.
Yeah, we'll do it at some point. So fucking good. But I loved that like little inchoate argument there, where she was just like, oh, you know, like, this is an argument like God is an imperfect being. You know what I mean? I like.
Yeah.
It.
No, that was very good.
Okay. As our checkout, where are you at with respect to like your relationship with anger after reading this and discussing it? I think kind of still unmoved from my previous position, where I would like to honestly get rid of a lot of anger in my life, but I am not quite sure that I'm going the complete stoic route of like the complete disavowal of all types of anger.
How do you feel about just pursuing like, I only want transition anger? I think kind of her framework. I mean, it might not be phrased quite like that, but like, you know, it's practical in a way, because it's, you know, you still would feel like the anger. But
honestly, I'm not wholly in the bag for that. And the thing that still is having me hang up is this like vicarious anger. I am not sold on the fact that you can truly like, I guess I'm still questioning the fact of like, how deeply can you love someone if you don't share in their, if you don't vicariously share in their anger over like wrongdoings? It's a question.
No, I mean, that is a good question. And this definitely relates to like the objective attitude stuff discussion.
Yeah, definitely. Does.
In your like expectations, it's consistent. I think that's fair. I definitely am, consistent again, leaning more towards like, I think the transition anger, that's like a reasonable goal. It's not like a stoic disavowal of like, you know, just like anger never, you know,
it's true.
It's like, it's just like temper the anger. Also, I did appreciate that there was like a very passing reference to Adam Smith. So
there were a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam, your relationship with anger.
Yeah.
Endorsed it even more.
These arguments made me angry. No, I mean, in all seriousness though, I think I am interested in trying possibly for the next week have the concept of, you know, transition anger just running in the back. You know, just in the background, just so that, you know, if I do experience anger over the next week, you know, and not just like whatever comes up my feed, but just real interactions that I have.
Yeah.
I'd like to try to make that transition.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like sooner than later, and see like, how does that affect me?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know,
those like, doors are getting expensive.
Love the image of just tearing off the door.
It'd be the immense strength too. Just like
it would be. Yes, you'd have to be ripped.
That'd be pretty impressive. Yeah,
that'd be
a true gorilla.
It's true.
The fruits of anger.
The fruits of anger. A reply to Nussbaum.
It's just me beating my chest.
Here's the only problem. Well, it's not a problem. I have a question for her, like in follow-up discussions of transition anger. The whole point of transition anger is this is outrageous. Let's do something about it. What happens in those cases where, like, this is why I'm suspicious of transition anger as like an ideal. Because I'm like, okay, but like there seems to be, and again, this could be an idiosyncrasy of like maybe my poor, I don't know, whatever, like phrenesis or whatever, but like there seem to be a lot of situations, or at least many, where you can't do anything about something that is still genuinely like angering or frustrating or annoying. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it seems like transition anger itself is still like, it would somehow better to actually just not be angry in those situations, which seems, you know what I mean? Like I almost, it's like, currently, I almost have this, like, I can imagine, like, okay, no anger, like the full-on stoicism about anger, transition anger, and then the full-blood, like, vicarious anger. And I almost currently want to try to figure out, A, when are each of those fitting? And then if I could just get, like, myself to match the type of anger that was fitting in that situation, I almost feel like that is kind of what I'm striving for here, because still, like, to like, you know, like in defense of Nussbaum, that would mean getting rid of almost all of my anger. You know what I mean? Like it would, or at least almost all of it becoming transition anger. I don't know.
I think it's worth a try. It's worth a try. I'm going to try it out.
Yeah. Let's over the next week or however it is until next recording. Let's try to focus on that. It'd be interesting to report, actually.
Yeah. And I'll do the opposite.
How many doors can I rip down? Tear down. That'd be interesting to see, all because obviously Adam and I are coming from a certain side of
fire.
And then Giffen has to do less to adjust. So
I'll make conscious effort as well.
Okay, cool. Because then that actually might. You might be able to illuminate much that Adam and I can't.
Perhaps.
All right. Well, we'll continue the Nussbaum book next episode, and you'll get to hear our reports of attempting to transition anger then. All right. Tune in then.
If you enjoyed this episode of Plato's Cave, please support the show by researching New Lane University. You can find out more at newlane.edu. Thank you to New Lane University for supporting this episode of Plato's Cave. Thank you.